Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and welcome to Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. This week, I speak to Dublin woman Audrey O'Hagan.
So by the time I got in and actually was lying on the machine in the PET scan, I'm now becoming very religious and I am screaming to God and anybody and the universe and anybody else that's going to listen to me. And I'm lying there going, okay, please, 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 if you just let this come back clear, I'll just have the hysterectomy. Like, the fear now is huge. Mm. And I was lying there going, oh no, I made a deal. I made a deal with God already. And when I was told I needed the hysterectomy in the first place, I prayed then to have, let me just have one child and then I'd have the hysterectomy. And I'm lying there going, oh my God, I made a deal already and I didn't upend my, I didn't keep my end of the bargain. So like, it's just, it's like just crazy thoughts go through your head. Yeah. They're not logical, they're not sane, they're just panic. And it's just, I was lying there going, oh please, 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 like if you just let this come back clear, I promise you I will have the hysterectomy. I won't delay it anymore. I'll just tell them I'm going to have it. Like, no more messing. I'll do it. Like, and I'm just lying down in a complete panic. You're on the machine for like half an hour where it goes from your toes right up to your head back down again, and it was the longest half hour ever just lying there going, please, like, yeah, please let me be okay.
Audrey is married to Dave and their son Hugh is almost a year and a half. She's in her 30s and works as a communications officer with Dublin Airport, a job she absolutely loves. And in this episode, she lets us in on the past 4 years of her life that have had their fair share of ups and downs. And even though the conversation is deeply emotional and challenging at times, it's also an uplifting listen as well. Here it is. Can we go back to the summer of 2017 and you were pregnant, but unfortunately you miscarried?
Yeah, so myself and Dave, we actually got married in September 2009. And from our first year anniversary in September 2010, we started to try for a baby. It wasn't working out. We left it. We were quite young. Both of us were very young. And we waited probably a bit longer than maybe we should before we went to the doctor. And when we did go to the doctor, they said, look, we did all the tests, you know, everything else. And everything was perfect, beautiful. The doctor said, look, you're really young. Everything looks great. You've loads of time. So don't be stressing over this. It could be stress. It could be grief. My father had passed away not long after my wedding, after a short illness. So she said it could be stress. It could be grief. It could be any number of things. Don't worry about it. So over the course of the years that followed then, we were trying on and off. And in the lead up to July 2017, we were actually going through some fertility assessments with the view to, at this point now, we'd waited long enough. We were maybe going to do IVF or IUI, but we were going to get some professional help.
Yeah.
As part of those assessments, I was sent off for smear tests, amongst other tests. Just before we were about to commence the proper fertility treatment, we got pregnant and we were absolutely delighted. That was the first positive pregnancy test that we had seen. And you can imagine, I had it all mapped out. I had the christening planned. I had everything, like, yeah, godparents picked out and everything. But unfortunately, that was short-lived. We only got, I think it was around a six-week mark that we lost the pregnancy. And I do remember at the time kind of going, no, surely no, like not after all we have been through to get a positive and then to lose it. That just,
yeah,
it can't be. And then, of course, I do know the statistics. I remember the statistics being very, very helpful to me because it just kept saying over in my head, look, one in four pregnancies end in miscarriage. And despite what you've been through to get here, statistically, you had a one in four chance of this happening. And it I mean, I was still devastated, but it helped a little because what it told me was it doesn't mean it will happen again.
And you weren't on your own.
And it's a good sign that you got pregnant, like, and, you know, all the rest. But to be honest, we never really got much time to grieve that loss because in the same week, my phone started to ring and it was my GP. And I was saying, she's probably just ringing to let me know what I already know, like that I've got, because I'd gone back to her for a HCG test. And I said, she's probably just ringing to confirm that we've lost a pregnancy. I already know that. I was really upset. And I said, I'm just not taking her calls. Mm-hmm. And she left a few voicemails on the phone. And they were really urgent. And I was like, oh, God's sake. So I rang back and she said, I need you to come in to me. I need to see you. I was in work at the time. So I actually called a taxi. I work in Dublin Airport. So I called a taxi, got in the taxi with the view to just going in to let her say what she had to say, which I assumed was to tell me that I'd lost a pregnancy and then get my taxi back to work. But instead, when I got there, she told me that she had the results of the smear test and that there was severe abnormalities and they were glandular abnormalities. So I didn't really understand this and I was scheduled to go for a colposcopy. But because of the pregnancy, I couldn't go for 6 weeks. So I was now left in this really weird space where you're telling me something really scary might be happening, but we can't find out for sure because we have to allow the pregnancy hormones to completely leave. So there was an awful period there of a few weeks before I was able to actually go and have the next set of tests carried out.
And what's going through your mind? I'd say those few weeks must have been really scary.
Not knowing. Scary. But when you've spent like 7 years focused on having a baby, to be honest with you, all I was concerned about was the delay because people had said, if you have a miscarriage, you likely get pregnant again really soon. And this was in my head going, try again. We might get pregnant again straight away. And now they were saying, don't. And you'll have to wait 6 weeks and you'll have to have more tests carried out. So for a lot of this, and it's kind of retraining my brain, the last 4 months in particular, I know we'll get there, but my brain is still thinking about babies. I just want to get back on track and start having babies. Like, so
yeah,
the fear definitely was there, but probably not to the extent that it maybe should have been at that point. So anyway, the 6 weeks rolled around and I went in. It was the end of October, nearly, before I'd had a colposcopy, and then I was called for lets. So I went in for the first lets just towards the end of October of that year. And a few weeks later, I was called to say that it tested positive for, so it's CGIN, so they're a glandular cell. Our screening system is more geared to pick up on squamous cells, which people would recognise as being CIN. CGIN is a little bit harder to detect because it's in the glands and it's kind of multifocal. So it can be dotted throughout the cervix. Whereas squamous cells, if you just do a let, you'll just laser them all away and they, if you're lucky, and they'll be gone.
And for people listening, that's exactly what that procedure is. It's basically you laser the cells away, you remove those cells
exactly
from where they are,
and you hope that they're just there on the surface and that it's that simple, that you laser them away, you'll get a clear margin, which is a good indicator that you can go on with your life. But mine came back with positive margins and they were glandular cells, so we had to wait another few weeks and go back for a second let. So the second let's took place then in January 2018. And again, I'm a pretty positive person and I was just hoping for the best and that we could get back on track, you know, new year, new me, all that kind of talk.
I getcha.
But sadly, for the second time when the results came back, they came back with positive margins. So three of the margins were clear, but the top margin was not clear. It was tested positive again for CGIN. So CGIN can be referred to as adenocarcinoma in situ. So you're in the precancerous zone or stage zero cancer. So there's something there that given time will progress into an invasive cancer. So obviously, if you're failing to respond to lets, the safest thing to do really, and that's what I was told at that point, would be to have a hysterectomy, would be to remove the problem as such before it had the opportunity to progress and become more serious. Now we'd spent, as I said, a long time hoping to have a family, and this really upset me. Like, and I was not having any of it. Like, I did not want a hysterectomy. I wanted to explore all other avenues. The doctor that we had at that time, he really wasn't prepared to discuss anything other than hysterectomy. In his eyes, this was a problem. We had tried twice to clear the problem. It hadn't cleared. hysterectomy was all that he was willing to offer me at that point.
Right. And that wasn't good enough for you, obviously.
No way. Not, yeah. And especially, like, we all have Google. And Google was telling me that there may be still options. Now, just because you Google options doesn't mean they're suitable for you or in your case or that you know better than the medical experts. But I just wanted someone to sit down with me and talk me through them. And if they're not suitable for me, explain to me why. And that wasn't happening. The only conversation I was having at that point was, this is it. This was what we're offering. And there
Nothing
was no
else.
Discussion. No, there was no discussion. So my care was referred then because I wasn't playing ball. And at that point, we're right up to, we've moved up to, I think we're in April 2018 at that point. So I've been in their care now for some time. And I was referred over to the gynaecology team at the Mater Hospital, where I was introduced to a Professor Donald Brennan. I remember seeing him actually and thinking, do you see, he can't be much older than me. And you're not used to seeing doctors that don't look much older than yourself. And it was lovely to chat to him. And he seemed to have a very different way of thinking. And he worked with me to kind of, his view was that we'll measure the risk here, you know. So we're going to keep testing you until we hopefully get a clear test. Oh, by the way, sorry, I should have mentioned I tested positive for HPV 16 and 18. So there are two of the HPV strains that are linked to 70% of cervical cancers. Mm. But your body, your immune system can clear this. So he was like, if we get a clear HPV back, it's a really good indicator. And we would encourage you to go get pregnant, like, straight away, as soon as you possibly can. I mean, as soon as your body will allow you to get pregnant, go do that. Like, and we'll keep you monitoring. We'll monitor you consistently and we'll review the situation at every hand's turn.
But this was really positive.
This
obviously.
Was brilliant.
Completely
this was
different,
like,
from the other opinion.
Oh, yeah. Because when the first conversations had taken place, obviously it turns your world up on its head and you're actually sitting there going, wow, are we possibly not going to have the children that we've been thinking and talking about for the last 7 years? Like, it's scary, you know? And you're saying, Jesus, we'd be one of those couples that, like, take 3 months off in the summer and holiday, but really all we ever wanted was our own children. And you're trying to map a new life in your head, but it's very hard to reverse back on your main focus for what's been your main focus for so long. When they had talked about a hysterectomy and stuff like that, at that time we had looked to explore all avenues, including treatment options, but also we had looked into surrogacy at that time. And that seems crazy when you're just two ordinary average kind of people, you're looking into something that's so extraordinary, like, and so not run of the mill. And I remember at the time it was just so overwhelming. Even we actually met with an agency at that time, and it was huge, you know, the thoughts of, like, I'm never going to carry my own baby. I'm never going to feel those kicks. I'm never going to have that experience. I'm never going to get to pose for my bump photograph. I'm never going to have my husband lie in my belly and hear it move and all that kind of stuff. And it was absolutely devastating. And I remember coming out of the meeting with the surrogacy agency going, Jesus, I'll do this if we really, really have to. Of course I will. But I really hope that we don't. Mm. And so when we met Professor Brennan at the Mater Hospital and he was offering a bit of hope to us, like, that was fantastic. Of course, the timing of all of this was right slap bang in the middle of the cervical check scandal.
Yeah.
So we kind of got caught up in that as well. There was huge delays in test results coming back. At one point, I had a smear test done and we were waiting for the results to come back with the view to having a procedure, which would be a transdominal cervical cerclage. So that is where they would go in transdominally and they would place a little cerclage, which is like a little stitch or a hammock as such, to do the job of the cervix.
Yeah.
They would do that before I ever got pregnant, because otherwise I would have been at extreme risk of, like, a preterm delivery, second trimester miscarriage.
Mm-hmm.
So that was meant to happen in the October of 2018, but results went off, they went missing, there was huge delays. It was an absolute nightmare. Like, and it's so funny because they talk about stress. I mean, you couldn't be
I can't begin to imagine the stress that for everyone involved. But the knowing what was happening in the media as well,
and the scary thing is as well, in the media you had all these brilliant brave women coming forward and they were telling their stories, but sometimes they would tell their stories. And at this point, don't forget, I don't have an all clear. I still don't know what's going on with me. And they're talking about their symptoms and they're saying, occasionally I would have had a bit of spotting or I would have had a little bit of back pain or whatever. And I'm like, I've had spotting, I've had back pain. And every time you hear something new, it's a new worry. And all the while you're waiting on your results come back, nobody has actually told you that you're okay yet. So, and you're still going to work and you're still doing your normal things and you're just up to 90 and you're trying to stay off Google and you're trying to stay away from the telly, but it's actually everywhere. Like, the news was in every all over social media. You couldn't, even in the canteen in Warwickshire, it's all people were talking about. It was massive. Like, so it was a hugely stressful time. But we continued to work anyhow with Professor Brennan's team. We managed in November of 2018 to get a clear smear and HPV, which was the green light for go, go, go. And let's get you as quickly as we can, hopefully on the right track. And suddenly everything seemed possible. It seemed very possible that despite the last 7 years, I fully believed I was just going to get pregnant now and have my baby. I don't know why, but it's like the clouds parted. And I was like, the last 7 years don't matter. Let's just focus on where we are now.
But you're very optimistic as a person.
Generally, I always say like on the third day she rose again. So I'll go down for a couple of days and then pick myself back up again and start to plan. I love a plan. I love to say, okay, what are we going to do next? What are we going to do next, you know? So
that procedure was carried out then?
I had that procedure in December 2018.
And then it was green light go.
Green light go. We did go, and then we had a false start because it turned out that I developed something called cervical stenosis. So that is because of the repeated surgeries on the cervix. You get a web of scar tissue that kind of forms over the entrance of the cervix. So basically nothing is getting in and nothing is getting out. So your chances of getting pregnant are very, very slim while that's there. So anyway, my doctors were, I think, as keen to get me pregnant as I was. So we went back in and they scheduled me for another little procedure in February 2019. And that was to dilate the cervix. So clear away the scar tissue, dilate the cervix and go, go, go again. So that procedure went well. And lo and behold, we were pregnant in April 2019.
Wow, that was quick.
Yeah, like that was like, I don't know why. I just had a feeling that that's how that was going to go. Like, I was like, this is going to work out for us. This is going to be fine. And we got pregnant.
Yeah.
Now we got phenomenal care. We were with the preterm surveillance unit at the Holles Reid Hospital. I was in there nearly every week, which was fantastic because the reassurance of getting a little ultrasound scan and seeing things move on a screen week on week was fantastic. Like, and especially when I used to talk to other people and they'd say they might have only had a scan like 8 weeks and then maybe not one till 20 weeks or something. And I was like, oh my God, I'm seeing my baby every single week. Like, we found out after the anomaly scan that we were having a little boy. And that was brilliant as well. I was unsure whether I wanted to do like a gender reveal as such, but actually it was great to know because then you can start to picture your life. Like, and you know, you're coming up in your head, you're like decorating rooms and picturing the clothes and the toys and just your life in general. Like, so
We were the same, and we found out when we were having our little boy that we were having a boy, and we loved it. No regrets.
No, none whatsoever.
It's great to know. Like, I mean, look, it's different for every couple, I suppose. But
I think I thought I was having a girl. I don't know why. And then when he was a boy, I was like, oh, okay. I must have thought it was a girl because I'm surprised.
Yeah.
But I was delighted to find it because, you start planning everything. Like, and you're picking your names and you're imagining what he's going to look like. And just, just being a boy mammy. And I was like, great. So to be fair, the pregnancy went really well. Like, we had no problems whatsoever. I kept active throughout the whole pregnancy. I traipsed that bump around Electric Picnic.
Class.
The bump was brought to Lizzo and the Spice Girls.
Brilliant.
Like, I never stopped. Like, and even right up until there's a lot of activity in the airport around Christmas. Like, you know, all the choirs go up and sing and stuff like that. And it was even just brilliant being there for all of that and having everybody was so lovely to me.
So you were still working through Christmas.
I worked right up until 2 weeks before I was going to have because I had a cervical cyclage, I had to have a C-section. So I was going to have Hugh at 37 weeks and 3 days.
Yes.
So when I say I worked up to the end, I actually finished work a little earlier, around 34 weeks, because my maternity leave was going to start earlier than ordinary. So it wasn't 38 weeks prancing around the airport, but still, like, it was a lovely place to be. The atmosphere was amazing and just happy. Just life is good. Like, finally, after all that, like, life is good, and life was good.
Yeah. And your pregnancy went really well, all things considered.
I had no problems at all.
Brilliant.
The whole way through. I mean, I had sleepless nights the odd time. I had, you know, the same little things that everybody has, but in terms of any major complication, none whatsoever. Like, it was beautiful. And we went in and had him, and I still remember to have an elective C-section as such. It's funny when they say elective because I personally didn't choose it, but I also knew it was the only way, and the stitch would stay in there until I'd completed my family. That's as it was explained to me. Like, so the C-section process was amazing. Like, we like checked in that morning and they gowned me up and took all my details, and I just remember we were being brought into the little room and everything was so calm. And even right up to the baby being born, and Dave was right beside me and the big curtain was there and we're just chit-chatting and the nurses and doctors are chit-chatting along with us, and next thing up he comes, he's held up over like Simba, like in The Lion King, up over the curtain, and for a second you're going, oh my God, that's ours, like that's ours, up until now it's on the inside and in your imagination and now it's real. And then they took him off and I heard him crying and I was like, oh, hang on, that's my baby's crying, like, and it was beautiful and so surreal. And they placed him on my chest, which was lovely, and Dave was there and someone was taking pictures of us from behind and it was all lovely. And then they just said, oh, actually, while we have you, you've a cyst here on the right ovary. Well, would you like us to remove that for you? And I was like, yeah, okay. And they're like, it'll just take an extra few minutes. Hold on. And the doctor that was treating me went out and brought in another doctor and they explained that they were going to remove the cyst from my ovary. Now, the mood in the room didn't change around it and everything was still very celebratory and lovely. And I said, yeah. And sure, it was an extra few minutes of getting to lie there and hold the baby on my chest. So I was like, absolutely no problem. Like, so they worked away. We continued chatting and laughing and crying and doing all the things that brand new parents do. They stitched me up. I went to recovery and a few days later I was home again and everything was great. I'd say maybe about 2 weeks later, the hospital rang and they said, just to give you the results of the cyst that we removed. I think at that point I'd actually forgot there ever was a cyst because it was so minor in the grand scheme of things. And they said it was a 10 centimetre borderline mucinous tumour. Now, when I heard tumour, I panicked because you do. And I was like, well, what does that mean? And they were like, no, it's okay. It's something that we can... Well, first of all, they were like, look, enjoy your baby bubble. We will see you again in a few weeks' time. But it's something that we believe we can either monitor. There's a few options here. So you could perhaps look at having the right ovary removed, or we can continue to... Because I said, I really want to have more children. Like, they said, or we can continue to monitor the situation through 6 monthly scans. So I said, well, I think I prefer option B, but, you know, I'll come in to see it. I was supposed to go in and see them towards the end of March of 2020. And I think we all know what happened towards the end of March 2020. We went into lockdown. So that appointment was pushed back. And actually, that was okay because we had enough going on anyhow. And I wasn't too worried about it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and it sounded like they weren't either.
No, they were fairly chill. Yeah. In fact, we even got a letter from the hospital kind of summarising the conversation that we had had and that they were happy for me to pursue another pregnancy and to undergo surveillance. So we had it in black and white, like, go ahead and do what you were intending to do and we'll see you when we see you for the next scan. So that was grand. So we played ball completely. We knew I had a smear and HPV test in June of 2020 and a internal ultrasound scan for cysts and stuff like that in July of 2020. So the first came back all clear for any abnormal cells and clear for HPV, which is brilliant.
Yes.
And then a few weeks later, we got a clear back for no cysts. I was lying there, so I could see it up on the screen. She was able to show me there was no cysts up there on the screen. Everything was great. And in fact, she said to me, are you hoping to have more children? And I said, I am. And she says, well, I can see loads of follicles here, girl. So get cracking.
I mean, you couldn't have hoped for better news at this point.
Oh, no. Happy out. Finally, like everything. That was like all those 7 years were like totally worthwhile. Like it was fine.
I
didn't mind that we had to go through all that to get to where we were now because life was good. We had our baby and we've the potential here to go ahead and have some more. So brilliant. Like we bought a new suite of furniture to celebrate. Strangely, I was like, let's make our house more baby friendly. And we got because like Hugh at this stage was like 6 and a bit months. And I was like, he'll be moving soon and we'll have another baby here. You know, they'll be like Irish twins. So we actually bought a new suite of furniture, which is weird. But we were happy out. So we began to try again not long afterwards, kind of from around August. We started to try again and we were having some difficulties. So I went back to my doctor. But luckily, I'm in good contact with them and I was able to email. So I was able to email back to my doctor and say, can I have an appointment? I think we might have an issue around cervical stenosis again, because it is possible for that to recur. Could you check us out? So when we went back in, I hadn't seen this guy from before I was pregnant and we were having a lovely chat and I just happened to, he says, how are things? How's the little fella? I said, he's great. How was Christmas? Christmas was brilliant. We're just chatting. Sorry, not Christmas. What am I talking about? How was the birth? How was the birth? How did everything go? And I said, oh, it couldn't fault it. It was a lovely experience. The whole pregnancy was lovely. I said, and oh, yeah. When they were doing the C-section, they found a cyst on the right ovary, but they removed it and it's grand. It's they said it was a borderline mutinous tumour, and sure, I've had scans since then and all good. So he made no fuss. He said, okay, grand, look, we'll book you in. We'll try and get you in just before Christmas for to laser away the scar tissue again and to dilate the cervix and do all that kind of stuff. And hopefully now, 2021, we'll see you back on your way. And he gave me a follow-up appointment for the 7th of January, 2021. So I'm happy out with life. Everything is brilliant.
And there's a plan.
Oh, I love having a plan. And then the plan was a good plan, you know, and we're literally working out. I'm a divil for doing the maths, like, and going, okay, so if this works and we get pregnant here, I'll have my baby here and it'll be this many months between Hugh and the next baby. And like, you really shouldn't do that. But I do it. Like, and
I think a lot of people do.
Yeah. You know, and I'm even picking out matching things. Like, there's always like a baby sale on here or there. And I'm like, well, I'll get two of those because it'd be so cute when there's two of them in the same room together and we'll have matching ones and all that kind of stuff. Like, oh yeah, there was nothing stopping us now, you know, everything was brilliant. So after I went in for the procedure, by the way, which went so well, I was up and running around the place and back home having my dinner later on the same afternoon. And everything went great. So Christmas was lovely and I was dying to get into the new year,
because that was only a few days before Christmas, was it?
I had it on the 21st of December 2020. So brilliant Christmas, because I'm on a high now. I'm like, great, the world is our oyster. Like, next year is going to be an amazing year and all the rest. So the news was reporting more lockdowns and it was said that there would be level 5 restrictions from January 5th. And I remember going, oh, that's probably going to wreck my appointment. My appointment's on January 7th. But no, they told me to come on in. So I went in to see him. He seemed, as ever, he seemed happy to see me. And the mood was good. We were chatting again. That's where I'm getting it wrong. How was Christmas? So yeah, how was Christmas? Yeah. How was everything? Brilliant. I said, thanks for seeing me today. Like, I really didn't think appointments were going to go ahead because we were in level 5. And he's like, yeah, they're not really going ahead except for in exceptional circumstances. And I'm going, right, yeah, what's okay? He says, right, look, I didn't say it to you at the time, but when you mentioned the borderline mutinous tumour that was removed at your C-section, it raised a red flag for me. Knowing your history as I do, I asked, I contacted the hospital and I asked for the pathology to be double checked. I'm saying, okay. And he says, and we double checked it and it showed positive for CGIN, for HPV. So for the same adenocarcinoma in situ that you have at your cervix is now showing as present on the cyst that was on your right ovary. I'm like, right, how did that happen?
And yeah, because that is strange.
That's really weird. Like, and I was like, how did that happen? He's like, oh, we don't know, because nothing has indicated to us that you have invasive cancer. However, invasive cancer travels and pre-cancer doesn't travel. So it's really, really unusual for us to find that the same pre-cancer that you have at the cervix is now present on the ovary, and it is a cause for concern. So I'm like, okay. And I'm doing what I always do, and I'm sitting there with him going, grand, so what do we need to do to get beyond this point? Like, just give me the plan.
You're a pragmatist.
What happens next?
What do we do?
He was like, okay, well, look, we'll send you for a CT scan. We'll send you for an MRI scan. We will, depending on the results of that, like, we'll touch base again. And I'm like, okay, so there's options. So I'm like, I only hear what I want to hear, you know? And I'm saying to him, like, okay, great. So we're going to have these scans. Assuming they come back all clear, maybe there's a little procedure we can do. Like, because in the past, you know, there was these little procedures that we could do. And I'm saying, maybe there's a little something that we can do and you can get us back on the track and we can continue on. And he's like, yeah, let's just see what the scans show. So the scans were organised. And for my follow-up meeting with him, they rang and they asked me to bring my husband with me. And I was like, okay, now this is getting weird, because whatever about me being called in during level 5 lockdown, like, it's not good if they're asking my husband to come with me. Like, but I'm going, okay. But at this point, we have like near a 4-year relationship with the doctor. So I'm like, I don't know, maybe we're just on really good terms. And I just wasn't sure. And you're clutching at straws and you're kind of going.
And you're still trying to keep yourself in a very positive headspace, I suppose, are you?
Yeah, constantly. Like, and I'm Googling things as well. And I'm like, you always find, like, I love finding like the miracle story, like where this person was told this and now look at them now. And like, you know, so I'm doing all of that as well.
But and that's good too, because we do need to keep, if we can. I mean, it's not always easy and you have to honour whatever way you're feeling, but sometimes it's good to fuel yourself on the the coming out the other side stories.
Yeah, yeah. And I wanted to be one of them. I was like, I'm going to come out of this and I'm going to be one of these brilliant stories that's like splashed all over the front page of some magazine. And everybody's going to read about it on their lunch break. And it's going to be me with my 27 kids defying all the odds. You know, so I'm like, that's what's going to happen. But deep down somewhere in your heart, you do feel a bit sick. And you're like, I don't know why they're making me bring Dave with me now. This is weird. So Dave did come with me. And of course, it was weird because he didn't have loads of patients sitting there with their significant others. I remember the nurse came out right out to greet us and escorted us down to the room, and just everything about it was different. Normally your name is just called, you turn around, you see your doctor, you follow them into the room. This all seemed very formal. It seemed like a bigger deal. So I was like, oh, okay. So in we go into the room, and I think the reason they asked Dave to be there was really for two reasons. And one being, I think they probably hoped he might hear what I just wasn't hearing. And two, I was going to receive some bad news, so probably going to need somebody to be there with me for that. So in that meeting then, they were much more solemn, much more grave and a bit meaner. Like, I have to say, they obviously felt the need to really hammer home the situation, and it was brutal, like it was awful. So they said, like, in the scans, it had shown that there was another 5 centimeter cyst on the right ovary and a small little cyst on the left ovary. Now, I'd never had cysts before. So they're like, that's a concern because it's a change in your normal behaviour, like, for you to have these cysts. They were really emphasising the fact that whatever I had at the cervix hadn't cleared. And they were likening it to, again, they explained, like, skip lesions or, like, skip levels. So if you had a little bit here and then it's a little bit further up, so you may get a clear margin, but that's actually not a good indicator for me anymore because it's not telling them for sure that it isn't somewhere else higher up and higher up again, higher up again. So, yeah, they were really saying at this point, and I know you've had this conversation before and I know you heard it 3 years ago, but we really, really believe that a hysterectomy is the only option for you at this point. And I'm going, no, but you know that I want to have more children. Can we not do, I'd looked up stuff. I was like, can we do a trachelectomy? Can we do this? Can we do that? I had like, oh man, everything. Dr. Google here had printed off like stuff that I found online, and I'm sitting in front of this gynecologist telling him what they could do for me. Can we try this? Can we try that? And he was like, no, I don't think so. And he's like, and I don't think you're understanding the significance of the situation. He said, if it transpires that there is invasive cancer here at a microscopic level, then what these tests are showing us is that it's already spread, it's already travelled. And I'm still sitting there going, well, then just take the ovary, like, just take the ovary and leave me with the uterus, and I can do IVF or something, and I can, you know, have a baby this way. And he's like,
you're in denial.
Completely. Like, I was like, no. And he said, we can offer you a second opinion. I was like, I very much would like a second opinion, actually, because, you know, you're not telling me what it is that I want to hear. And I think the nurse tried to chime in at some point, and she's very, she'd like to, they can't in COVID, but I know she would love to like touch your hand or touch your shoulder, but she was being so softly, and I'm just like fuming now and having a bit of a freaker. So I'm like, no, I'm not having this conversation. There are options out there. The book doesn't just stop with hysterectomy. There has to be something else that you can do and figure it out. Like, you know, you're the doctors with the big brains. You go off and figure it out, and I'm not having any more of this, and I just want to go home now. But I couldn't just go home. Apparently I had to go out and have bloods taken, markers. So even though I was fuming and all I wanted to do was leave and get out, I then had to take off and get my arm out and sit there and let somebody do the bloods. And I was so rude when I think back. I was so angry. I was so rude to everybody. And the doctor was trying to say to me, you know, the nurse was trying to say, cough, you know, for the injection. I was like, oh, just do it, for God's sake. I was actually mortified by my own behaviour afterwards.
I'm sure you well know now that it's probably a very normal response. It's a shock response. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure you've had plenty of times when you cried, and I know you've spoken about that. But sometimes, like, that fear and that hurt comes out in anger.
I cried that day. I did.
Yeah, of course.
I was starting to cry when they were doing the injections, and I didn't want to because I was so angry. I was like, I don't even want to cry here. Like, and as we were leaving the hospital, and before we even got to the escalator, I was crying. I feel like crying now. I was crying going down the escalator, and when we got in the car, I was just roaring crying. Sorry. It was just so unfair, you know. I was like, and to build us up, like, up until that point, I was having matching cots and double bogeys and all this kind of stuff. And then they're saying, no, not only are you not going to have that, like, but you might have cancer at the same time. I was raging. I remember going home. I went to my mom's house and just cried there. Sorry.
Don't be sorry. God, that'll take a second.
I'd like that. You'd cry, and then my mum would ask a question, and I'd try and answer the question, and then I'd cry again. And then, so you were kind of up and down. I know the next day I went to see my own GP, and I told her, and she was kind of looking at me going, this is well beyond my... I was like, no, you just need to give me something because I am losing my shit here. Like,
yeah.
And she prescribed Valium and Xanax. She's like, don't take them at the same time. But, you know, because I was really like, after losing the plot and that one, I was still more concerned about the fertility and the baby side of things, but the fear of a cancer was starting to hit home as well, a little bit. Like, I still wasn't letting that in. I was still thinking that we had more time. I was like, even if we knew we could defer this for a year, I could try and get pregnant, have a baby, have a hysterectomy afterwards, you know. I was still in bargaining mode in my head, but the fear was definitely starting to creep in. So I couldn't even tell you what date that was on anymore, because the next few weeks were just kind of messy and a blur. I know I had, they said they were going to send me for a PET scan. I just went, okay, grand, because I'd been sent for so many scans up to now. I was like, no big deal. But in the same week that I was scheduled for the PET scan, actually Lindsay Bennett appeared on TV, and she was after settling a case, and she was on the Late Late Show, I think, again on the Friday night, and I was listening to everything that she was saying, and again listening to all the symptoms and all the things that she was explaining. And then she said in her story, she mentioned, oh, and I was sent for a PET scan, and you know you're in a difficult situation now when you're sent for a PET scan, because usually that's where they're staging you. And I kind of went, oh, I didn't understand that that's what a PET scan was. I don't know what I thought a PET scan was. It was just another scan that I was going to be sent for. I didn't fully comprehend that this was
Think you'd be the only one.
Yeah, I just was like, okay, PET scan, grand, no problem. And now I've
And then when you hear that, you're kind of going,
so then, of course, I start Googling PET scans, and sure enough, there it is, PET scan, cancer, PET scan, cancer.
Right, okay.
And I'm like, oh my God, no, it's for other things as well. It is for other things too, but it's intrinsically linked with cancer and the staging of cancer. And I was like, oh, right, okay. Not good. And I went in for the PET scan then. I was in a different part of the hospital. You had to walk down a little link corridor, go into a separate room, a room I'd never seen before. It's kind of nicer than the rest of the hospital, to be honest with you. And I'm sitting there, and there was a young girl in the waiting room. She was in her 20s, beautiful girl. And she'd no hair. She was bald. She had a hat in her head. And I was listening to her give all her details over the counter. And they were asking her about, and she was talking about chemo and radiation. And I remember the fear of God just in me there going, this is not for me. This is not for me. I was like, no. Even when they brought you down, you were put into your little booth, but you could hear the conversations that were taking place with people in the other booths. And I could just hear these other conversations about radiation therapy, chemo, when was your last session? And I was like, oh, here. And you're sitting on a chair where they're putting, you have to drink a certain drink. And all of it just felt like something out of the movies, like something I've seen on TV that definitely wasn't for me, not for me. So by the time I got in and actually was lying on the machine in the PET scan, I'm now becoming very religious, and I am screaming to God and anybody and the universe and anybody else that's going to listen to me. And I'm lying there going, okay, please, 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 if you just let this come back clear, I'll just have the hysterectomy. Like, the fear now is huge. And I was lying there going, oh no, I made a deal with God already. And when I was told I needed the hysterectomy in the first place, I prayed then to let me just have one child, and then I'd have the hysterectomy. And I'm lying there going, oh my God, I made a deal already, and I didn't upend my, I didn't keep my end of the bargain. So, like, is it just crazy thoughts go through your head? They're not logical, they're not sane, they're just panic. And it's just, I was lying there going, oh, please, 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 like, if you just let this come back clear, I promise you, I will have the hysterectomy. I won't delay it anymore. I'll just tell them I'm gonna have it, like, no more mess. And I'll do it. Like, and I'm just lying down in a complete panic. You're on the machine for like half an hour, where it goes from your toes right up to your head, back down again. And it was the longest half hour ever, just lying there going, please, like, please let me be okay. Then you get off and you make that stupid casual chit chat with the people in the room, and I'm a devil for making like stupid jokes, and you're just like on the surrealness of it all, like,
sure,
from praying for your, begging for your life, to making a silly joke about something. It's just so weird. And
it's a coping mechanism, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And the horrible thing is, you have to do all of this by yourself. So even though I walked into the hospital okay, by the time I come out, like, my face was drowned in tears. You're walking past all these other people that are staring at you, probably wondering what's going on, where you're coming from. You're probably worrying them with the state of you. And it's like the longest walk ever to come back out of the hospital and to get back out and down and into the car. Like, and it was just awful. So at that point, I start to say to Dave, I think I am going to have the hysterectomy because I'm so afraid now. Like, I'm really, really scared. And the day afterwards, a letter came. So this letter was actually based on the meeting I'd had before the PET scan.
Yeah.
I'd had the PET scan, and this is just one paragraph in the letter. It just says, I've been very frank with Audrey and explained that if she does have invasive adenocarcinoma of the cervix, which has spread to the ovaries, she would likely have an incurable disease and that the prognosis here would be very guarded. So I read it and then I had to read it again. And I was like, hold on. She would likely have an incurable disease and that the prognosis would be very guarded. I was like, incurable disease? I was like, hang on, that's terminal cancer. Like, if it's incurable, then it's terminal. If it's terminal, then I'm dying. And I was like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, I was like, no, those words and me just don't make sense. So I'm going to email the nurse. And I'm going to ask her just to verify that what I'm reading here, that I understand it correctly. So I took a picture of the letter. I copied and pasted it into the email. And I said, could you just clarify that incurable disease means terminal cancer? And she just wrote back and she's like, yes, your understanding is correct. And I was like, how the hell did we go from having babies like a few weeks ago to sitting here potentially having terminal cancer?
Yeah.
How has this happened?
And that's what it was. It was such a short time frame.
Weeks. Like, over the Christmas, we had literally been planning everything we were going to do in the house and boy-girl names, all this stuff. Like, and loving the gap that would be between Hugh and his brother or sister. And now I'm reading a thing and I'm just reading it, and then you get so worried because you say, no, that's not for me, that can't be for me. But you're all over the internet and all over the media and all over the news are lovely young women. Like, cancer doesn't discriminate. It doesn't say, I'm not going to get her because she has small babies, or I'm not going to get her because, you know, she has no babies, or I'm not going to get her because she's 25 or because she's 36 or because she's 42. It doesn't discriminate. And so that little voice that gave me comfort back at the miscarriage where it went statistically 1 in 4, now all the statistics are terrifying because they're telling you you're as likely to have this happen to you as anybody else is. Yeah. Like, and it's so scary. Like, it was so scary. And you're Googling all sorts. Like, and I'm looking at, like, you're literally just looking up, like, how much time could I possibly have if this is the case? And so I'm trying to understand it myself. And so the reason it would have been considered to be a terminal cancer is because it has already spread from one site to the other, and that's where it becomes like a stage 4, and that's where it's considered an incurable disease if it shows up in another site. So I was like, and then you're getting so angry. You're like, Jesus, should I have ever had the baby at all? Like, have I made massive mistake here? And then, no, I'm like, he's absolutely the best thing I've ever done in my entire life. Sure. So there's no regrets there. But you begin to question every single decision that you've made all the way along, all the conversations you've had. You're playing them back over in your head again. And you're like, didn't he say this? Didn't she say that? Should I have asked this? Should I have, you know? But really, no, we did everything right. Like, we had all the scans. We got all the test results. We waited for everything before we moved ahead. So no, we haven't done anything wrong. And this is really bizarre. And that's what my doctor was telling me too. He said it's really unusual. Like, still, even after the PET scan, so they saw FDG avid activity. So they saw bold behaviour as such. Like, so the cells will respond to the sugar that's put in during a PET scan, and they lit up, like the cancer cells will light up like a Christmas tree. Like, and there was some activity there at cervix, and sure enough, there was a little bit of activity at the ovary. So there's definitely cells misbehaving on both sites.
Yeah, okay.
But there are no tumours, and they still can't confirm at this point that I have invasive cancer. And all my doctor's saying is that we're really worried that it's there at a microscopic level. A microscopic level means it's like little grains of sand, so it's not going to be picked up on the scan. And the only way we'll ever know indefinitely is when we literally remove all of these bits and pieces and have the opportunity to biopsy them. And then and only then will we know for sure what your situation is. And I'm going, so does that mean I could potentially be okay? And he's like, you really have to hope so, but I am very concerned by what I'm seeing here.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite
of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So, yeah. That was really scary. Nobody can be forced into having a procedure that they don't want to have. So even at this point, if I had still said no to a hysterectomy, nobody could have forced me into doing so. But you're really taking your life into your own hands.
Yeah.
My doctor kind of said, to be honest with you, I don't know if I could guarantee that you'd have a successful pregnancy anyway. Because in order for this thing to travel, if you think about it logically, it needed to travel up through the uterus and up to the ovary, so there's a good chance that the environment as such wouldn't be a good environment for an embryo or for a little baby anyway. So,
right.
I suppose he was trying to reassure me that a hysterectomy was absolutely the right thing to do, and that if I was to say no and take my chances at trying to get pregnant, there was no guarantee of a successful pregnancy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think at some point there, I remember going, all the shops were closed, Penny's was closed, and I remember going online and ordering a couple of pairs of pajamas, and then I ordered some fresh underwear and stuff, and what I was doing was packing a hospital bag, because then I was like, you're gonna have to take some control in this horrible situation, and literally there's nothing else that I could do. I had no other control. Like, all I could do was buy bits for a hospital bag, which was so horrible because it felt like it was only 5 minutes ago that we were after doing up the hospital bag to have you, and now we're there going buying pajamas, socks, all that kind of stuff. So I remember when the nurse rang me anyway one of the days, she said, it sounds like you're kind of coming around to the idea. And I was like, I don't think I'll ever come around to the idea, but I just know I really want to be alive and alive for a long time. I want to be my son's mother for a long time. My mom needs me, my brother and sisters need me, and Dave needs me. So if this is going to give me a chance, well, then I don't really, it's silly to think that I have any options. I really don't have any options. So we agreed then that we were going to have the procedure. It was scheduled for about 4 weeks' time from the time that I agreed it. And that, in a way, was good, but in some ways was horrible, because it's during those 4 weeks you have so much time to think about it and what it actually means.
Yeah.
And it's just changing your whole life, like, forever, like all the things that you were planning.
And at this stage, are you getting help?
Yeah, early on they had suggested, I asked for help actually early on, and it's really lousy because there's no kind of holistic view on all of this. So in some respects, like, the doctors are fantastic, but when you want counselling, it's not there, like, it's not part of the Mater Hospital package as such.
Yeah.
You have to go find it yourself. And they had said, like, to ring the Irish Cancer Society. And I remember saying, I feel like an awful idiot now ringing the Irish Cancer Society when you can't even tell me that I have invasive cancer. And I didn't ring it at first. I think I waited up until around the time where we knew we were going to have the hysterectomy. And then I was like, I really, really need help now. Like, I remember ringing another number and I got through to somebody who said, oh, geez, I don't know much now. It was a fella. And he said, I don't know much. Would you look up Hyster Sisters? It's a forum online. Like, and I was like, is that the extent of the help? So that was brutal. And I did look up Hyster Sisters. And unfortunately, in doing so, of course, people that do well, that tend to survive things and do well, they just move on with their lives. People that go through something and suffer all manner of complications, they tend to turn online, like, for support and for information.
Yeah.
So it's very one-sided sometimes when you go on those forums. Mm. What you're seeing is the bad stuff. And I was terrified. I was nearly more terrified of the treatment than I nearly was of the disease, because when I agreed to have the hysterectomy, the next thing is they talk about all the things that can go wrong. So they start telling you, like, all the complications you might have. 1 in 4 patients might have lymphedema, because I had to have a radical hysterectomy. So I had to have the uterus, the ovaries, and some lymph nodes. Initially, it was thought they would have to remove all of the lymph nodes, but they would try and only remove the senital lymph nodes, the main lymph nodes. Yeah. So they said 1 in 4 people can have lymphedema. I'm going, what?
And lymphedema, that's the swelling, extreme swelling.
Yeah, so I was like, what is that? And they're like, well, it's a chronic, lifelong condition. There's no cure for it as such. Swelling of the legs, a fluid build up. And it can be anything from, like, visually to look at it. You may not even know that somebody has it, but at the same time, you could see somebody that has a huge, a blown up leg, or both legs can blow up. Like, it can be debilitating. Like, you, I'm thinking of my life going, I was not that long ago that I was traipsing around Electric Picnic, and now you're telling me I may end up with a condition that's going to see me not even be able to stand or walk for a prolonged period of time. Like, everything they were saying was so scary. There's potential bladder problems, bowel problems, all manner of different things that could potentially happen as a result. Also, you've surgical menopause. Now I'm going, the only thing I knew about menopause up to that point was, well, I knew it existed. But I mean, I remember Samantha from Sex and the City had menopause on TV, and that's all I knew. And
sure,
I was like,
yeah. Wasn't on your radar.
Well, no, nowhere near my radar. And I'm like, well, what happens there? And they're like going through all the various things that can happen as a result of surgical menopause, and night sweats, and hot flashes, and mood swings, and all sorts of things. And I'm like, oh, here. Like, the more they're telling me, the more I'm going, oh, geez, I don't know whether I just take me chances. Take me chances and see how I get on, because this sounds awful. Like, it sounds so bleak. This is why I was, as you mentioned, did I get support? I was so glad I did. I did get onto the Cancer Society eventually, and they put me with a lovely woman who I'm still talking to up to now, like, and it was great to get a more balanced view. And it was actually her that explained to me, here, when you go onto those forums, you're obviously only really seeing one side of things.
Yeah.
Because for the majority of women that go through this, and they just are perfect. Some people have no complications whatsoever, not a single issue. But what do? They just get on with their lives. And so you never hear about those success stories. Like, you tend to only see a very unbalanced account when you go searching online. And
that's a really good point to make, though, for people listening as well, who might be going through something and find that they're going to Google for help or information. Because I know myself, to a lesser extent, but I still did it. I went on to forums, you know, when I was going through thyroid cancer, to read up. And you do. You're just hearing the horror stories. And naturally, that what you've just said there makes complete sense. And actually, had I heard that back then, I think it would have given me a lot of relief, you know, when I was Googling. So if you are listening and you are going through anything that you're finding, you're trying to get that information on forums online, you know, be aware that you're only seeing the extreme of the situation.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And as she said that to me, like, you, it kind of lifted a bit, and I was like, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
I was like, yeah, because the happy, successful people with no issues, they're just living life. They're not back on the hysterectomy forum because they don't need to be, because they've just got on with things.
Yeah.
And they're fine. And I understand that people go on those forums for, like, a support. And even if they're having particular symptoms, they might want to see if somebody else has been through the same. But there's a good chance you can come through all of this and just live your life in the best possible way and not suffer all these complications. And so that was actually really good to hear. And as she said, 1 in 4 will possibly have lymphedema. But that means 75% of people, if you flip the statistic, won't. And so you have a 75% of not having it. It just sounds, 1 in 4 sounds like Jesus. And then you say 75% won't have it, and you're like, okay. So she did a really great job of, like, kind of reframing a lot of the talk around the whole thing and the statistics. If I had had all the lymph nodes removed, I would have had a 30% chance of having that lymphedema. If I only had 3 lymph nodes removed, I only have a 3% chance of having lymphedema. Like, she was really good and really well informed, and she started to give me little nuggets, because that's what I said, I can't hear any more negative stuff. I understand we're in a litigious environment, and the hospitals feel that they need to advise you of all of the things that could potentially go wrong. But I was full up of that stuff, and I just needed somebody to start spinning things for me in a different way and, you know, give me some of the positive stuff. And they were really, really helpful little things to take away. Yes. And that's where I love the likes of Instagram, actually, because that's where you can see people who are hashtag living their best lives after coming through all of this. You tend to find it there, because it's where humans go on to tell their story. And, that was very helpful for me, like, to see people coming out and doing well. But it is hard. You really have to go looking for the positives, whereas the negatives always seem that a little bit easier to find. They kind of find you, whereas you have to go looking for the good stuff.
But I know you've connected to some people as well through Instagram who have been a huge support to you as well, who have gone through very similar experiences to you. I know you've mentioned a woman called Kim, and then somebody else who a lot of us are probably aware of. She goes by the name Two peas, not my pod.
Yeah, Nadia. An angel. I don't know how much she's worth now in consultancy fees at this stage. If she invoices me, I'm going to have to remortgage the house. But she's a beautiful girl. I actually connected with Nadia back in 2018 when we thought we were going to have a hysterectomy back then. And I found her just through Googling. Yeah. And at that point, of course, I told you I was thinking of surrogacy. So we made contact with her because she'd done it. Like, she had done it. She'd been through it. She's identical twin boys from surrogacy. So she's an angel because I stalked that girl from back then. I stalked her for a time, then I let her go for a few years, and then I picked her back up again in January of this year, and she's never not responded to a message. She's never left me hanging. You know, she is brilliant.
Do you know what, of all the episodes I think that Georgie Crawford has recorded on The Good Glow, it's one of my favourites, the episode she did with Nadia, because it's one of those, as you spoke about earlier, you're looking for those miracle stories. Her story is the stuff of miracles.
Oh,
really.
It is, yeah.
It is, when you hear about how the boys came about and everything. It really is amazing. So that's fabulous. She was such a support to you.
Brilliant. Like, and even now, she's still a support to me, just in a different way. But throughout it, she was talking to me about even getting a bit fitter for surgery.
Because
I was a devil for now, just comfort eating and hibernating. And she was saying, you need to get out, you need to walk, you need to strengthen your legs, you need to make sure you get your iron levels up. She's giving me this really practical advice on how to best recover from this procedure. Like, stuff I nearly wasn't even getting in the hospital. Like, you know, they were just telling me what was going to happen, but she was kind of giving me all these tips and skills on how to best prepare myself for the surgery. Even for my stay in the hospital, she was saying things to me like, pack bright clothes, you know, anything that will kind of lift your spirits. Like, give yourself a little project for while you're in there, and, you know, whether it's writing, whether it's like me, I love to plan. So whether it's coming up with what your plans are for the next 6 months, literally get in there and be doing something. But she was just outstanding, and I was asking her so many questions in and around menopause and stuff like that as well. She was like, Audrey, I don't have any, I'm fine. Like, she's like, and I was like, really, are you really fine though? Like, did anything happen to you at all? Because I think I always just linked hormones to moods, and I was terrified of like turning into some kind of screaming lunatic, and I was going to her, did anything happen? And she's like, no, I'm fine, absolutely fine. She's like, I get up every day, I live life, I look after the boys, I, you know, do stuff with George, that's her husband. And she's like, and every day is just a normal day, just like countless other families across the country. She's like, I am completely fine, it hasn't affected me in any way negatively, like, whatsoever. And I'm going, that's what I needed to hear.
Oh,
I
was like, that must have been just what a gift she was to you,
to find somebody that's out the other side, just getting on with things. And I was like, I can't wait till the biggest thing I have to worry about is forgetting to put the wheelie bin out, like, or something just normal. And so I started to think more positively again, and I was like, okay, I'm going to do everything she says. So I was doing my 10,000 steps a day, and I was in all these step challenges. Like, some days we were doing 20,000 steps a day. Like, I was like, getting the legs working, I'm going to improve the diet, get the vitamins in. And so the 4 weeks was an up and down experience, because at times I was terrified, at times I was sick, at times I was worried and angry, at other times I felt massively positive. And like, I don't know, I felt like, yeah, there's definitely life after this. Like, we just have to, this is something I just have to go through for some reason, and then I'm going to come out the other side, and there's a bit, please God, another 50 years ahead of me. And do you know, like, and so she was brilliant for all of that. Like,
so let's bring us up to April.
Yeah.
Which is only, it's not even 2 months ago since you had.
It's not even 8 weeks yet. Yeah. Like, so, as positive as I was in the 2 or 3 days before the procedure, I was a nervous wreck. I was so afraid. And I was also really, really terrified of the unknown, of what they were going to find when they opened me up. I'd made friends with another girl online, and I was actually a little bit jealous of her because she was getting the opportunity to have the trachelectomy. And I'm jealous of this girl, and I'm going, trachelectomy meant that she would still be able to carry her own children going forward. And they went to do her procedure, and when they biopsied, she had advanced stage 3 cancer. And it was there at a microscopic level. And I'm getting this news at the same time that I'm about to go in for mine, and going, Jesus, okay, where's... So I was actually getting really, really terrified now in the days before, and I was getting very upset. And I really never completely made peace with the procedure. I just knew that it was something that I had to do in order to give myself a chance at having a future.
Yeah.
I didn't want it. I never wanted it. It was never elective from my perspective. But it was something that had to happen. Like, I was really, really emotional and so tired. I remember being more tired than I had ever been. And the 2 days before, my arms, my legs were tired. Like, my whole body was just exhausted. And I don't know if it's from carrying the worry or what.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
But I was absolutely...
The impact of stress.
Wrecked. And then, yeah, you're trying to be like a good mammy at the same time and, you know, a good fun for your child. And also, I was packing up, like, as if Dave couldn't do this, but I was packing up, you know, for this day, there's his pyjamas, his vest, his socks, here's a set of clothes, here's a change of clothes in case he needs it. And I'm laying everything out, and Dave's brother was going to come up and stay for the few days while I was away, even though my mum's only across the road, but it was for him. He's also up the walls, don't forget, like, yeah, with all of this. So just to give him a bit of support there. I remember crying a lot, like, in the days beforehand, and any number of people offered me to bring me into the hospital on the day, but I said no. And the reason I said no was I didn't want to be a blubbering mess. And I said, I know if my brother or if my friend brings me in, they can only take me as far as the street, and then they're going to have to turf me out, like, and I'm going to have to walk in there on my own. They're going to get emotional, I'm going to get emotional.
Yeah.
So I was like, no, do you know what? I'm going to get a taxi in. So I had my bags packed up, woke the whole house up to say goodbye to me, posed for photographs. What do we live in such an Instagrammable life, but like, I'm about to go in and have this procedure and I'm doing big huge smiles and posing for pictures before I leave the house. Don't ask me what goes through my head, but we did that anyway.
Yeah.
And I'm there making jokes, doing boomerangs in the mirror going, last day with a uterus. I was like, what are you doing? Like, it's so strange.
But again, it's a coping mechanism, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like dark humour, I guess. But
totally.
I was like, bye-bye, all this kind of stuff, weird stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, got the taxi. It was fine in taxi because obviously didn't talk to the taxi driver at all. Got to the doors, and it's a long walk up to the matter anyway. Got out, got my two little suitcases out, like, because I was supposed to be in there for 5 to 7 days, I was told. So by the time I even got in the door, and then I realised I'm looking at all the signs and I don't know where I'm going. And as soon as I got flustered and didn't know where to go, I just started crying. And I'm so grateful for the masks, actually. I was so glad to have a mask on because my face just starts streaming and... There was no stopping it. Once I started to cry, I never stopped crying. It was so awkward for everybody involved. And I actually mean that because I'm crying. I'm asking someone for directions. People are trying to help you, but they've also got their own jobs to do or their own things that they were doing before they came across you. So everybody's trying to be nice, but I'm mindful of the fact that these people are busy and it's like they're really busy. They're nurses, they're doctors, they're porters, like they've got stuff to do, you know. I remember getting down to the ward. I managed to not cry for a second to check myself in. They brought me around to a little bed and just told me to sit there. So I'm just kind of sitting there with my suitcase beside me. I felt like a child going to boarding school or something. Like, I didn't feel like a grown woman or like an adult. I actually just felt like a child.
Yeah.
I really did. And I remember just sitting there, just watching everything that was going on around me. And then someone came over.
You were scared.
And they were terrified. And they said, hi, Audrey. Just got to confirm your details, whatever. I started crying. They were like, okay. But I said, you're just going to have to keep going because I'm just not going to stop crying. So they did. And this whole thing had gone through it all. Then the team of doctors came around and they're talking me through the procedure. And my brain is like, I'm hearing their words. There's so many levels of things going on in your head. I can hear them. And they're saying, we're going to start off with a keyhole surgery and we're going to do this. And at the same time, my brain is like getting upset. I'm like, I'm going to cry now. Don't cry. Don't cry in front of the people. And then I'm like, you should be paying attention. Pay attention to what they're saying, because what they're saying could be really important. You know, and you're like, sorry. Yeah. Say, what did you say again? And they're like, that's okay. We're just saying blah, blah, blah. And my brain would be gone. I could not hold focus for any more than a couple of seconds. It was like a million things going through my head.
Yeah,
and even as I was sitting there, I was still going, I wonder, is it too late to back out? I wonder if somebody else... I was half hoping a knight in shining armour was going to come in and say, we've pulled up your last file and actually we can do something different. I think right up until I was gowned up, I was still thinking... I'd read a story of the doctor who was going to do my procedure. He had done another woman's procedure, and on the day that she went in, he'd come up with an alternative. And so I kept sitting there going, any minute now he's going to come in and he's going to say he's spoken to somebody in China and they're saying that I can do this. And I was literally holding on to it right up until the end. So I went in, I put the gown on, I had the stupid socks on, and I'm like, the longer it's going on, the less likely the miracle knight in shining armour is going to appear, you know. But I'm still there going, okay. And then a porter came down and I was like, oh shit, like that, he's down here to wheel me to theatre, like there's nobody coming but maybe. So I cried on the trolley, I cried in the lift, I cried when we went up to the room where we met the people that were going to do the anaesthetic. So I had to have an epidural, and even as they're talking me through the epidural, one of the doctors was too going to do my surgery. One of them came in, and for a horrible moment, I was like, have you?
Oh.
It's so annoying that I do this, but I was like, have you come up with anything else? And he's like, oh no, love, I'm just here to get you to sign your consent on this. And I was like, oh, I really, really, really think I thought right up until the last second that somebody was going to come in and that he would have figured something out. Anyway,
yeah,
they didn't. I had to sign and agree to all the different things that they were going to do. They took my appendix. He was like, we're going to take your appendix. I was like, why? Is there something wrong with that too? And he's like, no, but you don't need it and it's in the way and sure, we're in there anyway. Kind of made me laugh. He was like, because I was like, did you just discover there's something wrong with my appendix? And he's like, no, no. So I was like, oh, okay, then that's a bit of a letdown. I was kind of hoping you were coming in. You're just taking my appendix now. So I was like, okay. So then they had to do the epidural. You know, if anyone that's ever had an epidural will know, if you don't know, like you have to literally hunch forward, like bend forward and not move. And like, you think it's easy to not move, but it's actually harder than you might think. Like, and they're saying they stay perfectly still. And especially while you're crying, it's very hard. So I just was bent over, like just head down. I remember somebody was being really nice, and I don't normally like touchy-feely, but someone held my hands, and I don't know who it was because I just kept my head down and cried, but it was a nice thing for them to do, actually.
Yeah.
So then they lie you back on the bed, and I'm still like, I just remember tears rolling down my face, and I remember just saying to the guy, I'm knocked out for this procedure, am I? And he's like, oh yes you are, like, as well as the epidural, yeah, you won't be. I was like, can you just do that bit now, because I'm just going to keep crying.
Yeah.
If I don't need to be awake anymore, then he's like, he just said no problem. And he took the little mask and he got me to count down from 10. And
yeah,
that was it. And then the next thing was when I woke up. And that was horrible as well. Actually, this was like the worst day ever. I remember just waking up with such a panic. I remember being asleep and then suddenly I was fully awake and I leapt up and I pulled the tube out of my throat. I was pulling the tube out of my throat and I could hear everybody rushing around. The girl was trying to take my hand off the tube. I can't tell you why I did that. I did it because I wasn't in my right mind. I remember, so she did it. And then I had excruciating pain. I remember actually screaming. I was like, the pain, it felt like I was on fire. Like I could feel fire across my hips, my left side, and an awful pain in my shoulder. And I was like, I'm in pain. And she's like, 1 to 10. I was like, 10, 20, like loads of pain. And then very quickly, everything calmed down. She obviously put something into the drip, a painkiller of some sort. The pain subsided. I started to calm down a little bit. And then as soon as you calm down, you get so embarrassed because I was like, God, I'm so sorry about that. I was so conscious of the panic I had just created and the scene I had just caused. And I was in this very trippy kind of place where I was embarrassed about my behaviour, but I wasn't with it enough to stop doing what I was doing. And I knew I just kept saying silly things. And I kept saying to her, did it go well? Was it okay? Did they find anything? Was there anything in there? And of course, they can't really tell you. They're like, yeah, I think your surgery went well and the doctor will see you later. And I was like, but like, did they find anything? Was there anything? I just kept repeating myself because I wasn't with it. Like, I don't know how long I was down there for, but I know when they brought me back up to the ward, I just kept asking for my phone because I'm addicted to my phone and I don't know how many hours had gone by and I didn't want to ring anyone, only Dave, just to say I'm okay, like everything is all right. I've asked for the phone about 100 times. Of course, they've got the busier things to be doing than go off and get me my phone. But I know it was like after 6 o'clock in the evening by the time I got my phone, and I'd gone in for surgery at about 8 o'clock, and it was such a weird, trippy day that I was like, my phone was going crazy with messages and I couldn't see it properly. All I was able to do was do one little message to Dave just to be like, I'm okay. And he actually texted me with more information. I couldn't read it though, but the doctors had rang him after surgery just to say that it had gone well. I was actually really lucky in that initially my surgery was meant to be abdominal surgery, so it was meant to be from my belly button right down, but they were able to do it through some keyhole incisions and my C-section, so they were able to reopen the C-section and do it through keyholes on the stomach. That was huge because it meant my recovery would be better. And the other little bit of good news was that they were able to identify those key lymph nodes, so they only had to take 3. So that was brilliant because they were the only 2 things we knew at that point, like that I didn't have to have the extreme surgery. That would have put me on the high dependency unit and I didn't lose all the lymph nodes. I only had to lose 3 lymph nodes. So that was good stuff. I remember seeing the doctor that night, but not really. He spoke to me around 8 o'clock and
it's all really hazy.
Yeah.
I suppose you were on such a cocktail of drugs. So while you're going through the recovery process for the days that followed and then obviously the subsequent 2 weeks, that's the wait for the results.
Yeah, that was really scary because I did well. Physically, I was recovering very well. I was in pain and stuff like that. Like, but it would be very similar to the type of pain a woman would have after a C-section. It was kind of like that. Like, so I was doing well. I was mobile, and so I was trying to just focus on those key physical milestones. You know, walking a little bit further with each day that went by, or just getting up and having a shower and getting dressed and playing in the garden with Hugh, but you can't play properly because you can't lift him up. And then I'd get a little bit upset again. And, you know, so it was very emotional a few days. But of course, yeah, there's the big weight on the results. Now, we got some preliminary results 2 weeks after the surgery, but they weren't the full results. We had to wait because of everything that was going on, and they had sent my pathology away. I think I had to wait another 2 weeks before I actually got to see my doctor and go through it all. So it was actually 4 weeks before we got to go back in and see it all. And yeah, during those 2 weeks, you're everywhere. And I'm still friends with, like, that girl that was diagnosed with stage three, and I'm seeing her. She's starting her chemo in my phone, and I'm like, Jesus, is that
the next step for me?
That's what's ahead of me. Like, and it was so scary. And I can't even tell you. And with regard to the fertility side of things, for the first time in all of the years, it actually wasn't the biggest thing that I was thinking about anymore.
Yeah.
You're kind of, it's very different. Like, you're kind of taking stock of what you have and how lucky you are. And I have my home and I have my husband and I have my little boy. And you're kind of going, for the first time, I think in a long, long time, I'm more concerned about just being well and being around.
Yeah, yeah.
And yes, of course, it's massively upsetting, but it wasn't the overriding thought process. Like, for so long, that was the big thing. That was the most upsetting thing. And now it's just like, just please let me be okay. Please give me more time on this planet. Like, please let me be around for all of these people. So, yeah. And it is crazy. I often think it's so crazy, all the things that are going on in your head and your heart and your stomach, and you're washing dishes, or you're like, you know, just doing normal mundane things. You're going out to pick up a carton of milk, and in your brain you're like, I really hope I'm okay. I hope I don't have to have chemo. I hope I don't have radiation. And you're like, yeah, just a half loaf, please. And you're like, it's so bizarre. Like, sometimes it's so surreal.
Yeah.
And you just, it always makes me think, you have no idea what's going on with anybody. Because you think of all the people that you encounter every single day.
Yeah.
You just don't know what's going on.
Absolutely.
Behind the eyes, like, so.
So that was probably the longest 4 weeks of your life.
Mm. It was.
But tell us about the results, because at least at the end of, I mean, and I know you've only just kind of distilled the past few years down, but at least there was light at the end of this pretty grim tunnel.
Okay. So we did get to go in and meet the doctor again, and the nurse was there, and Dave was with me as well. And they were able to tell me that, where do you even begin? I nearly wish I had it in front of me now to read to you. But they were able to say that there was extensive adenocarcinoma at the cervix, in the uterus, the lining, and in the right ovary. Bizarrely, it wasn't in the fallopian tube. And you would have thought that it should be, because that's the natural route that it would take. They're still a little bit unclear on how this all came about, because apparently there's only 20 to 25 similar cases for them to kind of measure it against.
Okay.
The closest thing they have said is that it was like a skip lesion adenocarcinoma. So basically it was just dotted randomly right up through the cervix, the uterus, the lining, and bam, up into the ovary. Now, it's a blessing that it went to the ovary and never went into the fallopian tube, because that would have moved it into the blood supply.
Okay. Right.
Which would have been more serious.
Yes, of course.
The lymph nodes were all clear. So yes. There was no...
Fantastic.
And I do not require any further treatment, and I do not have invasive cancer after all that. So no need for chemo. No need for radiation therapy. No need for anything else. No invasive cancer. Very bizarre case. They're going to do a paper on me. They're going to do a research paper on me. And yeah, like, they're as puzzled, but obviously very delighted with the outcome. Please God, I'll be here and here for a long time.
Yeah, sounds like you will, which is amazing.
To come. But yeah, so that was very emotional, and it was like an X Factor drum roll. And I'm trying to understand, because, you know, I've misunderstood in the past. So I'm sitting there going, okay, so does that mean I'm fine then? Does that mean I'm okay? Like, does that mean I'm all good? I'm clear. I'm here for the long run. And they were like, well, we hope so. Yeah, absolutely. Like, so Yay.
Oh, well, you know what? After everything, I'm obviously so happy for you.
Stop.
For you all, yeah. But it still doesn't take away from the fact that you've gone through this life-altering surgery. And I say life-altering in every way because of the impact of it emotionally for you, what it means.
Mm.
Now, we're going to go back a little bit because I do know that you decided to do fertility preservation.
We did. Yeah, sorry, I'm conscious I didn't mention that earlier. So when we were told in early 2018, that we were going to need a hysterectomy then, it was suggested to us at that time that it would be wise to preserve fertility. We were like, well, what does that mean?
Yeah.
And the idea would be that you would do a round of IVF, retrieve some eggs. And obviously myself and Dave being married, it's always better. You have a better chance with embryos than you do with eggs. So the idea being to create embryos. So we did that back then. And thankfully, I'm so glad that we did, because it was something that we didn't need to worry about now.
Yeah.
And it gives us a little bit of, well, you know, there's still options out there for us. Like, I won't be able to carry a baby myself, but that's not to say that we can't have a brother or sister for Hugh. Like, we live in a world where anything seems to be possible. And, you know, through the power of surrogacy, it may still be possible for us to actually add to our family and to give Hugh a brother or sister. So the other weird thing is, because we touched on that 3 years ago, we're back in the arena now, and it's not as scary now. It's definitely not as scary for me now. Well, I suppose there's a couple of things. One, I don't have a foot in both camps now. There are no other options. Whereas I think 3 years ago, I was definitely still hoping that I might be able to do it myself. And so I didn't really want to give in to surrogacy when I thought there might be a chance that I could carry a baby. Now it's really lousy, but that's gone. So there is only the one option, and that is surrogacy, if we wish to have a biological sibling for Hugh. So it's not as scary to me now as it was 3 years ago. And also, I suppose, even through the media, I've seen so many more people have gone on to have wonderful success stories through surrogacy.
Absolutely.
So,
we're hearing more and more about it all the time.
Yeah, the awareness is there and the understanding is there. And I always think it's wonderful. Like, well, it was always a blessing that I met Nadia. I really believe that she was sent to me at some point, like a little angel. But it's so lovely to know someone in real life who has done it, who's living the dream, who has her twin boys there. Like, and I'm going, well, that could be me. If it's her, it could be me. You know, I'm in every other sense. Okay, I've come out of the surgery. I'm fine. I have no bladder problems. I have no bowel problems. I have none of those other things that they said. But regarding surgical menopause, they prescribed a HRT little patch. It's so tiny. It's like the size of a postage stamp.
Yeah.
I've had nothing. No night sweats. No nothing. You wouldn't even know that anything had happened.
So that, like, transition has just been really smooth.
Seamless. Completely seamless. Because I had it within 2 days of the procedure. I had the little patch on me. Now I'm taking all my vitamins and I'm starting to pay more attention to what I eat and how I move and all that kind of stuff. But nothing, like, it has actually been pretty seamless. Now, I'm only 8 weeks in, so I don't know what the future holds. But I can only tell you, in the last 7 to 8 weeks, I haven't had any problems whatsoever. I'm probably paying more attention to my health now than I ever did before.
Yeah.
So,
that,
like, I'm
sense.
Getting the vitamins in. I'm kind of looking a little bit more what I'm eating. I'm trying to move a little bit more. Oh, I'm doing an X-Well program, which was something that I was referred to actually through the hospital. So X-Well was a program for 18 to 39-year-olds. Women with cancer. I don't know if it's just women actually, but anyway, in my case, obviously being a woman.
Yeah.
And it was for prehab and rehab. So before the surgery, they helped you. They did all these assessments to kind of figure out where you were, fitness wise, health wise, which for me now, I'll be honest, like, not great. Like, beyond walking, I wouldn't be one for the gym. I wouldn't be one for exercise. Diet wise, yeah, definitely one or two takeaways a week, like, easily, and sweets, and not a devil for the sweets. Like, I'm a comfort eater.
Yeah.
Or what's he say? I eat my feelings, and I have a lot of feelings. Like, so I'm kind of constantly.
Not the only one.
Yeah. But it's first time now, I'm a bit more mindful. And to do it now, it's not normally, if I ever did a diet or if I looked at my diet, it would be to get into a dress for a wedding or a holiday or something like that. It's not about that now.
It's
definitely a massive wake up call. And it's like, okay, let's just get yourself fighting fit. Like, I'd love to be here in 50 years' time.
Yeah.
You know, with children and grandchildren and all the rest. Like, so you're kind of going, yeah, no, now it's different. The motivation behind it is different. Like, and it seems to be clicking better.
Yeah.
I think you're, because your reasons are probably a bit better. Like, it's clicking better. Like, but I'm doing my X-Well program. I did it this morning. I was sweating. Like, they had me doing all sorts of exercises that I just haven't done in about 10 years. Like, but it's good. It's good to do it. Like,
yeah, great.
Looking at the diet is good. Like, and I'm not going to be on a diet. Don't get me wrong. I'm still going to have my sweets and my odd takeaway. Like, but it's definitely a more balanced
way of looking at
kind of approach. And like, so that if we do, and I think we will, go down the road of surrogacy.
You did say it there, you said children.
Yeah, so, this is
so
it.
So you see it, do you visualize it?
Oh, 100% I do. I have the whole... there I go for planning. So I'm already saying to Dave, if we do pursue it, it looks as if we may pursue it in America. Okay. Because they're really set up for commercial surrogacy over there. And I've already said to him, tell you what we do, Dave, now. We go over and I wouldn't leave Hugh behind, so we'll have to bring him with us. And we might get your brother, because he'll be in Canada. We'll get him to fly across to us, maybe for a week. And he could help out. And like, he could maybe mind Hugh on the day or and the next day, you know, give us a bit of a dig out. And then he can go back and do whatever he's doing. We could hang on there for a few weeks. Like, literally, like, this is what I've always done. And yeah, at times I used to kick myself for doing this, but it's me. I'm not going to change now. And so, yeah, already I'm going, I have the plan. Here's how it's all going
to
work. And
well, look, you visualised having Hugh.
Yeah.
And that happened. You went on to have your baby boy. Mm. You feel like you're going to have children. You have these embryos. So,
yeah,
in a way, what's stopping you?
Well, just
I know it's
huge this, chunk of change.
Yeah, serious amount of cash.
But apart from the huge chunk of cash that we're going to need, that's literally at the moment, that's the only thing that's we're just having to work at.
That is a big thing, let's be honest.
Ah, look, it's huge. You may need to move a few bits and pieces around and sell the odd limb or organ, but sure, look. We'll manage. I don't know. We are looking into all of it at the moment. Like, and it definitely is feeling better. It sits better with me now than it did then. And maybe it's because other options have been literally taken away. This is the option. So I don't know. It feels good. It feels right. And it's great that I have seen and heard so much more. There's been so much more talk around it. Like, and I know people, like, I know people in the real world that have done it and,
yeah,
you know, come out the other side. And so that makes it feel more attainable. Like, you're not just looking at Kim Kanye West, and you know, like, you're kind of going,
yes,
no, it's real people.
Real people yeah,
that could live on my road or be around the corner. They've done it, and if they can do it, we can do it. So, do you know?
Oh, you're brilliant. Yeah. You are brilliant. I mean, I got that feeling from you that you were extremely optimistic as a person, but it's important to be as well. Like, and we're all entitled to have shit days and feel like this is crap, and it's not always sunshine and flowers for anyone. Mm. But you have been challenged massively. And to be positive at the beginning of it, but still have that sense of optimism now, is wonderful. And I'm just so thrilled for you that you got that brilliant news after everything you've been through. So now really it's continued recovery, because it's still relatively short time. It's not even the 2 months since the operation. So you're doing great. So just continue to heal, get better, mind yourself, and then... Yeah,
see what the future holds. Yeah,
see what the future holds.
That's it. Like, but I mean, I'm so lucky to have a future. This is the thing. Like, regard everything that I've went through. Don't get me wrong. There was times when it was pretty shit, but I'm lucky. I'm here. I have all this potential. Like, you know,
yes,
I am
do.
Definitely one of the lucky ones that gets to come out and tell this story. So I didn't get to be on the front page of the magazine with the 27 kids. But, you know, I don't know that I won't end up in the front of a magazine going, dear, exactly. Here's what happened to me and here's where I am now. Like, so, like, yeah, I definitely am, despite it all, absolutely one of the lucky ones.
Well, I know you're inspiring a lot of people, because the reason that we are sitting here having this chat today is that I asked my followers on Instagram who they would suggest that I reach out to and talk to, and your name came up a lot.
Okay.
Yeah. So you have a lot of fans. And actually, for those listening who maybe so far have not followed you, can you give your Instagram handle so that they can now click and make sure that they don't miss a thing?
Yeah, click and then take a week off work, because I have the whole story in my highlights. It took me a week to tell the story. So it's Audge3000. So it's AUDGE3000. And yeah, you'll see my story one right through to the results. But I would actually take a few days off, because there's a lot in there.
Fair play to you. And that wasn't easy to do. But I think you give... You know, obviously in this conversation, people get a really good sense of it, but you go in much bigger detail in your Insta story. So they're in your highlights reel. Audrey, thank you so much. I'm excited for you for the
thank
years
you.
To come. And hopefully we might sit here and have a chat again in the future when baby number two is in
Imagine
the world.
Imagine now, wouldn't that be lovely? Wouldn't that be the business? Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Well, keep doing your thing. And you're inspiring a lot of people by being so honest on Instagram as well. So make sure you follow her if you don't already, and I'll put it in the show notes as well. Audrey, thanks a million.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you for reaching out to me and giving me this opportunity to tell the story. So thank you.
I'm delighted to have you. Thanks.
If you're concerned about any health issue, or if you haven't had a checkup in a while, perhaps listening to Audrey will encourage you to call your GP or make that appointment you've been putting off, or to reach out and ask for help if you're struggling. It really is so important to look after ourselves. And if you like this podcast, please show your support by leaving a rating or a little comment on Apple or by clicking follow on Spotify. I'd be so thankful. You've been listening to Ready to Be Real Conversations.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.